When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy
with Nissan
on News Talk.
And this is The Hard Shoulder, Kieran Cuddihy with you until 7 o'clock this evening. As I said a little bit earlier, we're going to be talking quite a bit on the show today about the shooting in Texas, in the elementary school in Texas yesterday. A gunman killing 21 people, 18 of them children. Ali Bradley is an independent journalist in Texas. She's at the scene. Ali, what is the latest in terms of understanding what happened?
Well, the latest is this, sir. We actually know there's 19 children confirmed dead at this point, which is absolutely tragic. And I can also tell you that it just confirmed with the lieutenant with the Department of Public Safety that all families have been notified. All children have been identified at this point. Now, when officials arrived on scene and the shooter was barricaded in a classroom, they actually went in and were breaking windows in the buildings nearby to extract and to evacuate the children and the teachers to get them to safety as quickly as possible. When I arrived on scene, it was still very active. They were still, you know, kind of deploying resources around the school. I have eyewitnesses telling me exactly what they saw, where the gunmen barreled through this neighborhood. They really didn't think anything of it because they have a lot of pursuits out here that have to do with illegal immigration in this area. But that's not what this was. The gunman actually ended up crashing, and they believe that he wasn't necessarily targeting the elementary school, but that's where he crashed his truck nearby and then ran into the school grounds by hopping a fence and then gaining access that way. I have a third grader who witnessed the scene and witnessed the gunman firing shots. He was weaving through cars in the parking lot before he gained access inside of the building. I can confirm to you here through multiple credible sources I've been working with here on the ground for months, because I've been covering the southern border, so that's why I was here in the first place, that a BORTAC agent, which is basically the SWAT unit for Border Patrol, he was actually the one who was able to shoot and kill the gunman to prevent any further loss of life.
I'm not sure which is worse, that, you know, that your child would be targeted by some lunatic, or that some lunatic would just happen upon the school and decide this place is as good as any. I'm not sure it makes a difference in the wake of something so terrible. What type of security was on site? It's because security on site in schools is something that we're not used to hear, but it exists in the States. Did it exist in this school?
Yeah, they do have school resource officers here. The third grader that I talked to did say that they have some armed, you know, officers out here, you know, which is pretty standard, as you said, across the United States.
I'm sure this school, like other schools in the States, they would have had drills and protocols and procedures that would have kicked into gear as soon as this began to happen.
So the young boy that I talked to, who is actually one of the agents who I regularly talk to, a source of mine, he was actually describing the scene, and he said they were at recess. And I said, did you know what to do? Did you have shooter drills? Did you know what to do? And he said that they didn't know what to do, that they were kind of ushered back into the building while he was outside. And so, you know, there's a lot of moving parts here that I will leave up to the investigators to determine. But the law enforcement agencies were very, very quick to respond because a lot of them were already down in this area, again, because of a lot of the immigration issues that are happening along our southern border.
And Ali, can you give us a sense of the reaction, the devastation that must be felt there in the local community?
I mean, it's terrible. This is a community of 16,000 people, but many of them will say it feels much smaller. You know, it feels more like 1,000 people. Everybody knows everybody. There's only 3 elementary schools in this area from what parents tell me. So most of the people know something about each other. And, you know, these are all border communities, so to speak. And so they might be a couple hours apart, but all the communities rally together. And these small communities are extremely resilient, and they do lean on each other substantially. And the family that I talked with, you know, one of my agents who is a source for me, he's the one who initially told me about the shooting. And so I was able to be one of the first on scene, unfortunately, and they didn't know where their child was. And so when you speak about devastation, you know, you have all of these families that for hours, even up until the overnight hours, didn't know where their children were. And I don't have children, but I cannot even begin to wrap my head around what that would feel like. And because this is a more rural community, a lot of these parents had to drive 30 minutes, 40 minutes to get here in response to finding out that their child was in a school that was involved in a mass shooting.
God, could you imagine that drive, that 30, 40 minutes in stone cold silence in the car on your way to the school. It doesn't bear thinking about, like, so many aspects and angles to this. It doesn't bear thinking about. Ali, listen, thank you so much for that update. And if there's further developments throughout the rest of the evening here on the show, we will speak to you again. Like I say, thank you so much. We were talking a little bit earlier about this shortly after 4 o'clock and making the point that in the wake of something like this, well, lots of things happen. Thoughts and prayers are offered. Promises are made that nothing like this will ever happen again. You know, promises are made that gun control legislation will be introduced. And then we end up back in the culture wars. And the NRA gets talked about a lot in the context of those culture wars. I wonder, though, to what extent do we here really understand the National Rifle Association and the history of that organization, that association, that lobby group, if we'll call it that. It boasts millions of members and spends just as much money trying to fight against gun control measures, the types that will be called for in the wake of this awful shooting. Well, Frank Smythe is the author of the NRA, The Unauthorized History, and he joins me now. Frank, you're very welcome to the show and thank you so much for your time. When we talk about the history, or the unauthorized history in your case, of the NRA, where does that, or when does that history start?
History starts over 150 years ago in 1871 when the NRA was founded. And it was founded by two men who were interested in improving the military riflery skills of U.S. troops. They realized that the Civil War was over in the United States, but they kept an eye on European wars, especially the Franco-Prussian War. And they saw how the Prussians had defeated first the Austrian Empire and then the French Empire, two larger empires, through better riflemen and better riflery. So they developed the NRA as a private initiative to improve the shooting capabilities of American military forces and military-age civilians. And that was the model of the NRA for another 80 years. It wasn't until a century after the NRA was founded in 1977 that the NRA embarked on this absolutist course, as they put it, for gun rights. And they've been on that course now for the past 45 years.
So in those first years post the Franco-Prussian War and up until, you know, the early 1970s, how did they have an official position, for example, when gun control legislation was being debated?
Very good question, Kieran. The National Rifle Association took no position on gun reform or gun rights whatsoever until much later. The first reference to the Second Amendment didn't come until the 1950s. The first mention of civil rights as an umbrella for gun rights wasn't mentioned until 1968. So for more than the first 100 years of their existence, for the first 80 years of their existence, excuse me, they had no mention of gun rights. It wasn't on their agenda. It wasn't something that they talked about or they were concerned about. It wasn't the first inkling that they were worried about gun rights came in 1922, which is 50 years after the NRA was founded, in response to a New York State gun law regulating handguns that is now before the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court is now likely to overturn, as well as the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia creating the Soviet Union. So there are inklings of gun rights in the NRA from the early 20s, but they didn't take positions on it. They didn't come out as an organization and defending gun rights until much later.
Would I be right in thinking as well that, you know, the views within the association, or certainly at the upper levels, would have been mixed? They would have been nuanced. There was, as you say, maybe there was a perception that they would have been opposed or anathema to any idea of absolute gun control, but things like machine guns and high-powered, high-velocity kind of assault rifles, like there are examples of them, you know, kind of, I suppose, not supporting that type of legislation, but certainly not opposing it.
Well, the issue of machine guns is interesting because that came up in the 80s. And the NRA has been intentionally ambivalent about whether or not they support the legalization of fully automatic weapons. The basic line they've taken is this is not the time for push for that, but they're reluctant to say that automatic weapons should be illegal. But again, it's only been in the past 45 years, past 50 years, that that gun rights has even gotten onto the National Rifle Association's agenda. The big lie of the National Rifle Association is they want everybody to believe that they were founded as a civil rights organization, that they've always been interested in defending gun rights, and this is just complete crock. This didn't come until much later in the modern era, in the 1970s, in response to a federal gun law passed in 1968 and at a time of rising crime in the 1970s and also the time of vigilante movies of that era. That's when the NRA became radicalized, and only then. And other gun rights groups in the United States were also each formed in the 1970s, even before the NRA became radicalized. So this notion that the gun rights movement in the United States dates back to the Revolutionary War, like some adherents in the Three Percenters claim, is completely false. It's a phenomenon that is no more than 50 years old.
Frank, sorry, that's worth repeating, I think, just for how absurd it sounds on the face of it, that part of the reason that the NRA became radicalized was because vigilante movies happened to be popular in the 1970s.
That had a great deal to do with it, rising crime, as well as a federal gun law passed in 1968 in response to the assassinations of JFK and especially Bobby Kennedy and Martin Luther King. After those assassinations, Congress passed the law and President Johnson signed it to regulate interstate sales of mail order guns and impose other restrictions on firearms. But for a certain group within and outside the NRA, this was a line that was crossed, and that's what radicalized them. And then they came back organizing two different gun rights groups in the early 70s and then changing the course of the NRA by the late 70s. But it's a relatively new phenomenon, and it was influenced by the vigilante movies of that era, Death Wish, Dirty Harry, and more.
And to what extent were the NRA, that radical voice that took over the NRA, to what extent did that reflect changing public opinion around gun control, or did they then go about changing public opinion?
I think it was much more a vanguard, if you will, and operating very much like a vanguard in a Marxist sense. They realized that they believed that gun control had gone too far, that they needed to foment a movement. So they are the ones who decided to change, first to take over the NRA and then to change public opinion. And the one thing that you can't deny about the National Rifle Association is they have been extremely successful in their messaging, changing public opinion completely. Back when they became radicalized, 3 out of 4 Americans firmly believed in stronger gun control, not unlike what the polls show today in terms of supporting background checks. But now that's become, at least in terms of Congress, it's become flipped, right? The elected members of Congress, especially in the Senate, the Republican leadership today seems to be completely opposed to any form of gun control. And that's largely a result of NRA messaging going back over 50 years, financed in no small part by the gun industry.
So that has been the real mark of their success then, has it? It's not so much public opinion, which has kind of wavered a little bit, but maybe not a huge amount. It's the fact that they've managed to get so many politicians on side.
Right, and also they've organized an army of voters who are hardcore, dedicated, single-issue voters. And they may be small, but they vote in blocks. And that's very dangerous for anybody who wants to oppose them and very appealing for those who want that support. And that's been the key of the strength. It's not at the NRA's money that gives them their power. It's the ideology that they've managed to spread throughout the nation so successfully and in a way that hasn't been challenged by Democrats or or people that want gun control. And I think that's the big mistake. The NRA's messaging is their success, and it's gone unchallenged for about 50 years.
Yeah, you mentioned Democrats and people who want gun control. You don't mention Republicans, who are very much on the NRA's side, largely as a party. Like, has that always been the case? Has it been a more recent thing that they've managed to kind of inveigle themselves right into the upper echelons of Republican Party politics?
Absolutely. It's a very much a more recent thing. There was bipartisan support. The NRA enjoyed bipartisan support and had Democrats like John Dingell from Michigan, who was on their side and supporting them for a number of years. And then there were fallouts over things like the Brady campaign and some changes. But guns was not necessarily a left-right or Democrat-Republican issue. It's really been in recent decades, the past 20 years, and especially since the Trump years, that the Republican Party has become much more ingrained, that gun rights, that was always part of the Republican coalition, but more on the fringes or on the edges at least, now is a center plank, as important, I think, as abortion is to their political agenda. And that's very dangerous. And what's also come in with that is white nationalism, which was not part of the Republican Party before, but it's certainly white nationalism and gun rights now are intertwined in the planks of the Republican Party. And that, I think, is something that's new and also dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm sure there are upstanding members of society or members of the NRA and feel very strongly about its kind of historical context and the right to bear arms and yada, yada, yada. You don't have to scratch too far beneath the surface, though, Frank, to find some of those much more malign influences that you talk about. I mean, you say white nationalists, neo-Nazis as well.
Absolutely. And the other thing is, the other success of the NRA and the gun industry and the larger gun lobby is they have, as a result of their messaging there and influence on Congress, they've been able to create the largest civilian gun market in the world. No other nation has gun sales to civilians, retail gun sales like the United States does. And that fuels crime guns going from states with weak gun laws into states with strong gun laws like New York and New Jersey, as well as guns flowing out of the United States into Mexico and Central America and the Caribbean. So that is something that has benefited them. And white nationalists have always been very strong supporters of gun rights, but the NRA in particular has tried to keep them at a distance. Those firewalls broke down during the Trump years, and now it seems that everybody who's part of the gun rights coalition has no problem with the fact that there are extremist groups, Proud Boys, Oath Keepers, neo-Nazis, neo-Confederates, who are all part of the same gun rights coalition. And that's something going forward, which also is part of the Trumpist movement that's emerged now in the United States and which looks like it's here to stay.
Well, given you understand so well then that the level of their influence within the Republican Party, what hope do you think there is that any of the promises that are going to be made today and over the coming days about introducing gun control legislation in the wake of this shooting will actually come to fruition?
I have no hope that any meaningful gun control is going to pass anytime as a result of these recent shootings or anytime in the near or even longer future. We have the only law that's been passed in recent years is a law prohibiting bump stocks after the Las Vegas shooting, where a shooter used bump stocks to convert semi-automatic rifles into slow-firing, fully automatic rifles, right? Imperfect, but still fully automatic. That's the only law they've been able to pass, and the NRA decided not to oppose it, which gave ground to some of the people to the right of them. But it really is just a symbolic law. It doesn't really mean anything. I think we are unfortunately years, if not a generation, from meaningful gun reform in the United States. And that's because the messaging by the NRA and other groups has been so effective, while the Democrats have not challenged their lies, their bogus narratives, their fake history. The Democrats have chosen to just try to rally support for gun reform, thinking that'll be enough and we'll beat them at the polls. And even though they won the trifecta, they won the House and the Senate, although it was thin in the Senate, and with Joe Manchin being something of a turncoat, it was difficult. The Democrats still, even though they seemed like they had power, were unable to pass even one gun law since Biden took office.
Yeah.
And that's not going to get any better now. And the reason is not because of the NRA's money, which many reformers and Democrats still insist on believing. It has to do with the ideology. The Republican now, the Republican Party voters now all seem to buy into this absolutist vision of gun rights. And until that ideology is challenged, they're going to continue, I think, to block gun reform for years to come.
Frank Smyth is the author of The NRA, The Unauthorized History. Stephen Kieran in Ballinaclash says, when the Second Amendment of the US Constitution was passed in 1791, Flintock was the latest technology in firearms, firing just one ball per minute. There is no justification for civilians to own automatic weapons. I think it tells you something, doesn't it, about the membership of the NRA when Frank said that they lost some of their support amongst the right when they abstained on the debate of bump stocks. This was the device that would allow you to convert a semi-automatic weapon to an automatic weapon, all the better to slaughter the innocents. You can get Frank's book, I should say, in all good bookshops in the States online if you want to read of it. It is a great read, The NRA, The Unauthorized History. Listen, stay with us. We've lots still to come on the show today. After the break, we're going to be finding out exactly what is in that Sue Gray report.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With Nissan.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.